Their fellow Marines were deployed to L.A. amidst the immigration protests. And of course, you're a Marine veteran. Your final thoughts on what's happening today? And do you know if your father will get out?
I'm not sure if my father will get out yet. That's what we're trying to push and trying to do. And then about the whole Marine Corps thing and in LA, I mean, I know these Marines are just following orders. But I do believe that they're hurt as well. As I know that a lot of their families are undocumented or came from another country and raised them right, and that's why they're there.
Alejandro Barranco, we thank you so much for being with us. Marine veteran, son of Narciso Barranco, who's currently being detained in California. And Jonathan Hernandez, council member for the city of Santa Ana, thank you. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
Too much fun.
Too much fun.
That's news to me.
Too much fun.
Just can't be. There's a whole lot of things I never done.
I ain't never had too much fun.
She was only 16. She was into L.A. I was
for having too much fun.
Too much fun.
That's news to me.
Too much fun.
Just can't be. There's a whole lot of things I've never done.
I ain't never had too much fun.
We're having too much fun.
Too much fun.
That's news to me.
Too much fun.
Just can't be. There's a whole lot of things I've never done.
I ain't never had too much fun.
.7 FM WRHU Hempstead, New York, 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh, Radio Carnegie Tech, and 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. You are listening to the One World Community Radio Show. I'm Ricky Hubert, joined by the lovely Lydia Mahwanana in Cape Town, South Africa. Lydia, I ask the same question every week. How are you today?
I am doing quite well, thanks Ricky. It's just a bit cold this side. Winter is has finally kicked in, actually, so it's super cold on this side. But other than that, I am doing fantastic. How about you, Ricky? How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you very much. What's interesting is that it's because you're saying winter has kicked in on your side. When this airs, we're going to be in the middle of a heat wave here on Long Island, and so none of us are looking forward to that. But it's interesting because I was talking with our guest before we came on about how we're in the different time zones and we're still able to do this. So kudos to us that we make it work.
We make it work indeed.
We make it work. And speaking of making it work, we're going to welcome our guest now, Professor Louie of Professor Louie and the Chromatics, who's going to talk about their new album, Crowing Around, and their upcoming show. Professor Louie, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, Ricky, thank you so much for having me on and having Lydia on, too. It's nice to have two hosts.
Lydia is the host with the most, though.
Oh, come on, Ricky.
That's the way it works.
Lydia is so popular at Hofstra, she has no idea. But that's a story for another day. Louie, talk to us about your band, Professor Louis and the Chromatics, and this new album that you have, Crone Around?
Well, Professor Louis and the Chromatics, this is pretty much our quarter century turn. We've been together for about 25 years. And so we decided to put a new CD out in honor of that happening. This is the 18th CD that we've released, and we are consistently touring and playing shows. And that's why we have the show at my father's place to kick off our summer season on June 27th, Friday night. Fortunately for myself, one of the reasons that I live here in Woodstock, that's where I am, Lydia, we're in Woodstock, New York. And the one reason I moved up here is I got a job in the music business with a great group called The Band, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame group, The Band, which changed the course of music history. There was The Band, The Beach Boys, and The Beatles, and The Band was one of the three on Capitol Records. And I got a job with them. They lived in Woodstock, New York. I came up. They hired me as their producer and musician, off and on the road, and I stayed with them until they finally disbanded in around 2001, but around the year 2000, the Chromatics got started, and we've been on tour ever since and putting out records. And that's what people will get when they come see us at the Roslyn, place in Roslyn. Roslyn, it's the bottom of the Roslyn Hotel, my father's place, on June 27th. We'll play a bunch of band music and records from and songs from our new CD, Crone Around, which is on. At this point, we're up. It's only been out about 10 weeks. It's on about 140, 150 radio stations across the world.
150 radio stations across the world?
I think so. That was the last report I got. It's being played on quite a few stations in America, regular terrestrial stations. And then, of course, we have the internet stations that play it around. And then there's a few stations in Europe that's been playing the record. So it's getting really well received and fantastic reviews.
Well, now you're going to hear it on some more stations because it's going to be played all over the One World Radio Community Network, which is very exciting, and we thank you very much for sharing that with us. You had mentioned that the band started about 25 years ago. This is your quarter of a century anniversary. Congratulations. That's no small feat. So I know you mentioned that you were opening for the band. How did the Chromatics form? How did that all come together?
Well, the band I worked for, we didn't open. I actually had a job with them. That's where it gets a little strange to say the band or the Chromatics. So we got to make that distinction. The band, I got the job with the band, you know, through a great artist by the name of Artie Trom. I was working on a James Taylor's brother's record, Livingston Taylor. I was playing some keyboards on it. Artie Trom came in and said, the band made a movie in 1976 called The Last Waltz, which became a very large movie and a well-known movie. And they disbanded, you know, they kept playing, but they sort of disbanded as a touring act, as the band, after that movie. And then they decided to regroup again in the mid-80s, and that's when they called me. And the Chromatics got together because while the band was getting together again, they were looking for new songs to record because they hadn't released a record in about probably close to 17 or 18 years. And they put me in charge of finding songs, overseeing the recording. So I put a great band together. I was living in Woodstock of all the best musicians that lived in Woodstock. And they already had a band called The Crows. And so I hooked up with them and got them to record and be part of my demo world, you know, demonstration records, so I could show the guys in the band when they got back to see what they would think of these particular songs. And that was pretty much the beginning of the Chromatics. It was called Crows. But so many Crow bands came out at that time, the Counting Crows and the Black Crows, that we decided to call it a musical term, which is chromatic, but we called it Chromatics. And that's how that came about. You know, the mid-90s, we would play shows together, fooling around or open up for the band. And then in 2000, when we saw the band was coming to an end, we decided we'd go out on our own and got a pretty good record deal at that point. So we're on our way.
And you've been on your way for a very long time. I believe Crone Around is you've done 14 studio albums prior to this, correct?
Well, this is actually maybe 14 studio. We could have put a few live out. It's, you know, I lose track, but it's actually, I know in terms of the big picture of live records and DVDs, it's like the 18th release anyway.
When you're putting together these albums, because you have the new album out, Crone Around, what's the creative process like, and how do you differentiate it and build on what you've done before?
Well, that's a good question, Ricky, because it's not easy always to figure out when you get started what to happen. The first thing is to have enough courage to get started. We start putting some songs together. We get in the studio with the guys in the band, and we end up jamming and putting things together and just coming up with ideas. And we'll listen to those and then come back with some more tailored songs. Like on this record, there's tailored songs. I started realizing that it was coming together with a very uplifting message, because that's, once we wrote Elevate Yourself, which has become a pretty good anthem for us, once that started coming together, I said, let's make the whole record an upbeat record and a very good feeling record. And lyrically, because the lyrics are the most important of it all for me on most things that I, you know, records, is that it's an uplifting record. So let's try to keep all the songs uplifting and making people feel good. And let's not get too many, you know, depressing songs, which, of course, are popular. So that's how. So Elevate Yourself. Once we knew we had that, we knew we were ready to make a record and what direction we were in. And then I decided it would be good, because right now there's sort of a craze of tribute bands out there, people coming out to see their favorite bands from the 60s and 70s and 80s. And since I worked with a lot of the great acts at that time and produced a lot of records with them in the studio, I decided that we should record, you know, maybe three of those groups and a song from each one of those groups. So we recorded a song by the band. And then I worked with a group called Commander Cody and the Lost Planet Airmen. That was a very big band, especially on Long Island. They were a very big band. And they made a lot of records. I think their record maybe got to be number one or two. So we recorded one of their songs. And then there's an English artist that I produced called Graham Parker. Graham Parker and the Rumor. And so we took one of Graham's songs and recorded that. And of course, being with the band, I worked with Bob Dylan, because the band was Bob Dylan's backup band. And so we decided we should record a song by Bob Dylan, because, you know, I worked with him a few times and he's part of that world. So that's how the four cover songs came about. Seven originals, or eight or six originals, because there was another fella that was a fantastic composer, classical composer, from New York City, who lived in Europe and New York City. And I always really enjoyed Moondog. When I was growing up as a kid, I drove a cab in New York, and I used to pick Moondog up in the cab and give him free rides. And so I recorded one of his classical pieces of music on the record called Bird's Lament. So the record started really taking shape once we got Elevate Yourself. That was the main one.
And I'd like to find out about your creative process. You know, you touched about writing the lyrics of the song, but can you walk us through the process of creating Crowing Around? Like, was the project born in the studio, on the road, or somewhere in between?
Well, you know, it's a long process. A lot of the stuff that we do gets born on performing so much, because we may take a lick and then, or a riff, and jam it. And then we'll take it back. Miss Marie, who's in the group and my partner, she's a very good lyricist and a great songwriter. So she'll take it back and tell us what we're doing wrong and start putting the songs together in that kind of process, and then bring it to the band. But the main thing is, once you have the sketch of the song, you bring it to the band. And fortunately, we have great musicians, and you play it maybe three times in the recording studio and then leave it alone, and then maybe come back and check out how it's doing. So the process is multi-processed. It's, each song has its own character. But for me, as a producer of a record and trying to have a thread so the record is listenable from beginning to end, I'm just not making singles. From beginning to end, you sort of have to have a vision of where it's going and what's happening once you get one or two songs that are working. So that's really the main thing. Once you have your direction, just stay in that direction and don't change it. For that record, you know, you may write something that will fit another record, but don't change it for that record. Keep it so it really can develop. If you keep jumping around, it's really hard to develop anything. And a lot of artists do that.
And you know, your sound is very, it's a blend of Americana, blues, rock and roll, and folk. And so seamlessly, I'm like, how do you keep that balance while keeping everything fresh?
Well, I think the fresh part comes from continually performing. So you're playing in front of an audience. You know, before all those categories, I mean, there were categories. The group, the band, invented Americana music. There was no Americana music or called that before the band. So I was there from the beginnings. And I was also there at a time when all musics were accepted on one show or maybe on a record, or people could like more than just one music. You know, what happened is a lot of it is based on the music business. We're in the business of music, but the music business corrals people. They'll go after one genre so they can sell more records, or they can determine what it is. So all of a sudden it becomes, well, this is folk music. So on folk music, you know, you can't have a rock and roll band on the same show. And on a rock and roll show, you can't have a blues artist. But at one time, they were all sort of meshed together on the same shows, and they would have festivals where you would have a variation of types of acts and types of music, and people were very accepting of that. So we come from that world, and that's why no matter what I do, there's always a cross-section of styles of music in our music, Professor Louie and the Chromatics music. And since I was there, not from the start of a lot of things, but I was there, I definitely caught, you know, the giants of that world before they passed on. And so I'm really thankful, you know, that I was able to play with them and able to see them, including folk artists and blues artists and rock and roll artists. That's pretty much to keep it fresh, is performing live in front of an audience. Try not to, you know, reach out and try to learn some new music. Just don't rely on only the songs that get over to the audience that you know, but try to reach out and present them some new original music and see how, what their reaction is. Don't be afraid of it. And that's what we'll do at my father's place on Roslyn on June 27th, Friday night at my father's place, because that's why we're out playing.
And that's so beautiful, you know. And I'm listening to you, like, it's been 25 years, right? And looking back on your journey as a band, what are you most proud of?
You know what, I'm really, there's a bunch of individual shows, of course, I'm really proud of, and it's great. But we do one show in Albany, New York. It's Schenectady, but it's in the Albany region, and that's the capital of New York State. We do one show every 5 years with the symphony up there, a youthful symphony, maybe a 100-piece symphony with a 100-piece choir. And it happens in a big theater around Christmas time. And I think we've done it now 5-6 times. And it's about 3,000 people in the theater. It takes place 6 nights in a row. So you're playing in front of about 18,000-20,000 people in 1 week. It goes on CBS television throughout the region, which hits about 6-7 million people. But the best part of it is that it raises money for the Children's Cancer Ward at the Albany Medical Hospital, which is really a big one. The medical hospital ward is called Melodies. The show is called Melodies of Christmas. We wrote a song called Melody of Peace, which we perform at that show. And it's raised about $14 or $15 million already in the 10 years that we've done it for that cancer ward. And that's one thing that I've done in my life that I'm extremely proud of, that we were part of it. And we get to play with a 100-piece choir and 100-piece orchestra playing the song that we wrote. You can see it on YouTube. It's called Melody of Peace, CBS 6.
How do you decide as a musician what message you want to give to your audience?
Yeah, the lyrics are the most important, especially to deliver a song. You got to tell a story. Well, the story about Melody of Peace, the song Melody of Peace, it wasn't that hard to come up with the idea, because the people from the Melodies of Christmas, which is CBS 6 and Price Chopper and Fryhoffers, those are the three main ingredients to put the show together, came to me and said, we'd like to have a theme song for our television show. Do you have an idea what you could write? And I wanted to have something that wasn't religious or necessarily only about Christmas, because life is much broader than that. And not everybody celebrates Christmas, and not everybody worships the same entities. So I said, let's do a more of a song that's broader, but really has a meaning. And I thought very hard on it and came up with the lyric, since the show is Melodies of Christmas, let's call it Melody of Peace. And I thought that would really work out. And luckily it did, the lyrics. So I wrote all the lyrics tailored to Melody of Peace in that time, and a time of year when people can feel that way and can relax for a minute. Because right around that same time of that December time, there's every religious or every entity has a holiday of some sort. So that time of year is a year to reflect upon yourself. And that's why we came up with those lyrics. The other thing I like doing is not making songs too long unless there's a real reason for it. So you have to condense the meaning within 3.5-4 minutes, which is what we did. And that song works whether it's 5-piece band, whether it's 200-piece band, or, you know, whatever, or orchestra. And fortunately, somebody heard it from a record company called ERM Naxos, which is a classical label. They liked it so much that they sent myself and Miss Marie to Prague, and we ended up recording it with the Prague Symphony and Choir there. The song really has gotten legs, and it's known all over the place, as much as things can be known these days with so much out there. So that's a very proud moment for us.
What do you write first, the lyrics or the melody, and why?
Okay, well, if you're lucky, because the lyrics are going back to being the hardest part, or the concept. The thing that's the hardest thing to do is come up with the concept of the song lyrically. So it's good. I mean, you can do it on your phone. You do notes just to come up with one-liners. I have books and books of one-liners. Because then when you have one good line, you can start writing on it. Now, if you sit down at the piano and just play, you have to just play. For me, I hear something in my head and I can just play it, that's a really fortunate sleep dream one night. You know, you just say, oh, I dreamed this song, but that doesn't happen that often for me. Play a chord sequence or a melody sequence, putting notes together. And now you have all these one-liners that you wrote, and you can see which one-liner might fit in to that melody or that chord structure. And then you start putting them together and see how it goes. And then when you feel like you have the right concept musically with the lyric, because it sounds right to your ear, then you can start expanding on the song and making it become a song. So the thing is to constantly be writing, whether it's just one lines, you just sit down and just play and maybe record a little bit of that and write that, so you can always keep going back. And pretty soon you could thread things together. The other way Miss Marie and I do it, she'll write a song, I'll write a song, we won't work together on it. Then we get together and we have like 3 or 4 songs that we've written. And then sometimes it's better to combine the songs as one song. And now you have an interesting aspect of one other person's viewpoint, lyrically, and one other person's music. So let's say I write a verse that's good, but then she has a song with a strong chorus. Maybe my verse is actually better in her song than my chorus, and we can put her chorus to it. So it's nice to have a writing partner. It really does help, but not too many writing partners, but a couple is good. So what comes first, it depends upon the song. Like with Elevate Yourself, which is, you know, the main theme of our record, which gave the Crowing Around the concept of the whole CD and all the rest of the songs that were to follow. I think I might have had the funk music part first and then looked around for a lyric that would fit in. And I didn't want a lyric that would be too wordy. I wanted one that would be more rhythmic, because the music that we had put down was a little more on a rhythm side of R&B and with the horn section and things like that. So each song is different, but it's good just to keep writing and keep experimenting and putting things together.
You wanted a message with the melody of peace that was inclusive of everybody. Would you say your desire to have to expand to different groups by being blues, Americana, gospel, all of that, would you say that was part of your desire to have different musical fusions come in part of your act as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's always pretty much my intent, to musically speaking, for performance, because that's getting a little more into the performance side. I don't think I have much choice. I am what I am, and I do what I do, and that's my background. Gospel, you know, I played the gospel circuit, and I played the blues circuit, and I played the rock and roll circuit. So if you can get all of that combined and tells the story to the audience, you've really done a good job. Without doing it consciously, though, you know, I don't really sit down and try to do I don't sit down and just try to do everything consciously. I mean, there are idioms that you follow the structures. Let's say you want to write some blues kind of songs. There is an idiom to follow there, to follow that structure. So if you want to have that, you know, you want to keep that going. But on a song like Melody of Peace, or on Elevate Yourself, or there's a song on the new record called A Million, it breaks that mold a little bit and goes a little more diverse. And it's just the way it came out. You know, it's like, you sort of can't separate yourself from your writing. It is what it is, and you are who you are. And if you try to separate yourself too much, it doesn't come out honest. So like if you're just writing because something's popular, I mean, you can do that and make $1 million. I'm not saying you can't do that, but it doesn't come out honest, and sometimes it doesn't last as long. You know, songs don't last as long if it's not as honest. The greatest songs and the greatest performers are the people who are as most honest as possible.
How do you take what you learn on stage? Because we'll talk about performing live and touring, but how do you take what you've learned on stage and put it back into the studio when you're working on the next album or the next song, or maybe even going back and tweaking an old song if you do that?
Yeah, well, learning from the audience is your best teacher, especially if it's an attentive audience, or, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about an audience where people want to talk while you're playing, you know, one of those kind of shows. But when people are sitting there listening and you're watching the audience, watching their reactions and what's going on, the idea is the whole idea of playing music and whatever you do in a performance sense is communicating. So what you're learning from the audience on every show is a little different, of course, in every audience, but you're learning how to communicate and what's communicating for the time, because as time moves on, that also changes. So what I take away from each show that we perform, and over the years when I'm writing or doing things, what communicated really strong for this period of time and this kind of music, and what grooves are communicating, what lyrics seem to be working correct, what harmonies, how is the audience relating to you? That's a really big one. You can't second guess, but you got a pretty good idea when you're up there if it's working or if it's not working. That's the trick to that, is pay attention to what the audience is doing as much as you can without compromising yourself.
And how do you take what the audience teaches you and when you go back into the studio, or even from like a night-to-night basis when you're performing in Roslyn?
Well, a lot of that is, you know, you can't, you know, once you do something on stage one night, you can't go back and change it. But let's say you don't do as good a job as you might want. Yeah, playing a lot is you got the next night to try to fix it. So you want to just try to keep getting better at what you do, and, you know, don't labor on it, don't hang on it, but try to fix it and get it much better. So for the next night of playing, that's what you want to take back from the night before, from the previous night. As far as bringing it into the studio when you're writing, it depends on what the album writing, but like say the Crowing Around CD, which is the one we have now, when we were writing that and doing that, I was thinking the whole time of a show and how the songs build and come down and how the audience would reflect when we play this record straight down at a show. Is it strong enough for a live show, or is it just for a listening pleasure at home for somebody? And on this record, we decided we would do it for a live show of people listening. And so we built the songs in that way. So the audience was in mind as much as you can, you know, perceive what they would react if you kept putting these songs back to back. So the first song starts off, you know, the first couple of songs start off with a real big bang, and people really could then get up and dance from the first note. And then you hit a nice ballad or a different kind of groove to change the pace. And so that's what I'm bringing back from the audiences for this record, for the Crowing Around record.
And talking about the audience, how have they responded to Crowing Around so far? Are there any surprising reactions?
Well, I'm always surprised. You know, I'll tell you the truth, Lydia. When you write a song and you start from the beginning and people, you go out and you play for the people or your reviewers, whatever, and they really like it, it always is fantastic for me. And it's always a surprise for me, because you never really can second guess, you know? And so therefore with this CD, I've been quite happy and quite thrilled with how much people have played it on the radio, especially something like Elevate Yourself, or that we have Too Much Fun and a few others. And it's just a real thrill and a surprise about how well the record is being received. And also when you're playing songs for, let's say, live for an audience that they've never heard before, which is where the radio, like a station like this, really helps out by playing songs, because people may not even know the song, but they've heard it. It's in the back of their mind. But I'm always really happy if we play a song nobody's, that I know of, an audience has never heard, and from minute one, they either get up and dance or they start applauding halfway through the song. I mean, that's an amazing feeling of something you wrote and remembered that you started from scratch, that is communicating and telling the story that much.
And that's true. And talking about creating new music, do you ever go back and listen to your old records? And how do they sound to you now?
Our old records sound great to me, and the songs sound great. And I always do go back, because with the invention of YouTube and social media, now a record I made in 2001, which I feel has some great songs on it, and it's a great recording, it didn't get heard like it could get heard now. Because in those days, in 2000, 2001, the social media was nowhere near where it is now, and YouTube. So what I did was I took a song recently for Memorial Day, a song's called The Great Beyond from our first record, which was called Over the Edge. And I had somebody put a memorial video to it, you know, honoring the soldiers and people who didn't come back, because that's what Memorial Day really is about, is people didn't come back from all wars. It doesn't only have to be America, but America, you know, honors that. And they put a video to that song, and then we're able to put it on YouTube. So even the older records still get legs and still hold up because there's a new way to present them.
What's interesting about holding up and if it works all over the place is that, because you guys, as you were mentioning, you were in Prague doing a little recording. You guys have toured all over the world.
Yes.
Tell us what that's like. There's no other way to phrase it.
Well, you know, it's always been exceptionally exciting to me because, first of all, you're going someplace where people want to see you. So as soon as you show up, you sort of won the game because they want to see you. And being from America these days might mean a little something different, but you know, as a musician and just staying in the musician's world, the music world, people are really interested in musicians and artists who saw the real thing that they like, you know, because everybody's references are different. So if somebody never saw the band or they never saw Muddy Waters, they want to know what it was like to see them or be on stage with them. And they want to know what you do and have it push off to them. So, for instance, at one time, you know, we go into Siberia and I would combine my music with balalaika players and different Siberian musicians. And we put a show together where they would play some of their music, I would play their music, and then they would try and play some of our music. And America has a lot of the roots music. And Lydia, I know you're in South Africa. Now, I used to work with a lot of South African musicians in New York. Dollar Brand, I don't know if that name is familiar to you, or UMass Aquila, which is one of the most famous South African musicians. They used to come to New York. Are you familiar with that name?
Yes, I am definitely familiar with that name.
Okay, well, Dollar Brand was a great jazz musician, piano player, who broke a lot of the color barrier because the South African musicians I knew couldn't be on stage. White musicians could not be on stage with black musicians then. It was still apartheid. And one reason they came to New York was to get on stage with black musicians and learn from the jazz that they learned from. And Dollar Brand, who was a solo piano player, he got a loft in New York City on 23rd Street. So when all the musicians from Cape Town or Rhodesia at that time would come to New York, they would all stay in this one loft. And I'd go there. And there was the greatest musicians. UMass Aquila, we used to jam with them all night long. When we would go there, because at one time we went there, I had this other friend, Jeff Sohn, who was from Cape Town. We would go there and play. Everybody was really welcoming. So wherever you go, you know, as an American musician, they want to know about the history of American music and what it was like to grow up in that environment. So it's always been well received. And I've always done shows when we've traveled, besides presenting our own music. We've always done shows a lot of times with the youth of the country, and they might put a choir together because in Europe, there's always minister of cultures, especially Eastern Europe. Each little town has a minister of culture. And they would put shows together and we would come. One time I took a train across Russia. You know, we would stop in all these villages and get out and play shows on at the train station. And that was a really good one.
So how do audiences, because you said you've played Long Island many times, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
So how do Long Island audiences, when you're doing it somewhere like Long Island, how does that differ from somewhere, when you were saying with these ministers of cultures, how does a Long Island show differ from that kind of a show?
Well, the Long Island people, the audience, have gotten to see a lot of music. You know, that's one thing. Their references are very big and very large because, you know, so many great musicians come from Long Island because it's a populated area and it's close to the metropolitan area, New York City and around that. So the audiences in Long Island, they know their music and they know the honesty of musicians and the reality of it. So you have to be a little more sometimes on your toes musically to play like in those metropolitan areas like Long Island. You know, you could go at any time to see a large show or in the smallest club to see some of the greats. That's what separates Long Island. So when I mention a group like The Band, the people who grew up in Long Island, they know exactly who I'm talking about and they might even know some of their hit records and songs. And it'd be nice to have some younger people also, because some of these groups influence some of the younger people that listen to music now. They might not know which group is which, but then when they hear the songs and they come, they understand where things are coming from. So it's that part of it also starts going. around. And that's what you really want to do, is you really want to spread the wealth of the history of music. And because we're all standing on the shoulders of the artists that came before us. And so if you're aware of where it might come, or you just go to a show and forget your problems or forget the world's problems for an hour and a half. It could be that simple also.
And your show is taking place on the 27th of June. And what can people expect?
Well, what they can expect is good musicianship, number one, good singing. And that's number one. Number two, in terms of looking good, you know, you got to look pretty good for the audience. You don't want to get up there necessarily in shorts. The thing that musically, what they can expect is a cross section of music. Since we have a history of playing with great musicians, they'll hear some band music from the songs of the early band, which are the classic rock songs from 1966 to 1976. And then when I got with them, I presented to them and recorded maybe 50 or 60 new pieces of music with them. And some of them became hits like Atlantic City or Blind Willie McTell or Book Faded Brown. And so they'll hear some of the classic music of the band. And then they'll hear some of the songs I helped create with the band that became hits. And then they'll hear some Chromatic original songs from the Prone Around CD. And then we should probably, and will play, you know, a couple blues songs and maybe folk songs that are music, part of the music historical kind of pieces of music. So they'll get a wide variety of pieces of music. So they'll get some songs written in the 1800s, some pieces of music written in the 1960s, 90s, some pieces of music written in 2023. That's the kind of cross-section show that we present.
I know you guys, because this is the kickoff of your summer season, this show in Roslyn. What's the touring schedule like for any kind of band? That's just something that piques our interest. When you go on tour, starting off on Long Island, how do you manage that schedule? Because it's a grueling schedule. And how do you make sure that you can give it every single night, even when you might be physically drained from the day of traveling?
Well, you know, Ricky, at this point in time, for me, I feel like, you know, it's an athletic exercise. You know, it's like going to play a game. It's like going to play the baseball game or the football game. So you have to constantly, and this is a hard thing to do, and it's hard for musicians to get, and that's why they pass away so young, or, you know, when they shouldn't pass away, is you have to be in training every day. So you have to exercise every day or do something. And that way, when it's time for the show and you give everything you got, you're sort of in shape. You know, it's just not getting in shape just that night. You have to constantly be working out, and you have to constantly think of yourself as an athlete and keep working at it. When you're a little younger, you don't have to think about that as much. But at this point in time in my life, I have to think about that. That makes it happen, because what's really grueling is the waiting around, because you have to get the show starts at 8, but you might have to get there 2 p.m. Now you're waiting 6 hours to do an hour and a half. And then you might have to drive 3 or 4 hours, or get in a vehicle and drive 3-4 hours, and then start the next day or a couple days later. You really have to keep yourself in shape and think about what you eat and what you don't eat. And it's sort of a drag, you know, but it's sort of a necessary part of life if you want to keep this going. And try to keep a positive attitude, because your mental attitude can make you physically sick. And also the music business, not the business of music, but the music business has a way of, you know, making things uncomfortable for you, let's say that way, because you're always sort of being challenged by the business. And you're always thinking somebody's doing better than you are. That's one of the natures of the music business, is the game is to sort of keep you down a little bit. So you really have to ignore all that stuff and just do what you want to do and stay positive. And if things are a little bit down, it changes. You know, take advantage of the slow times. Don't worry about it so much. So to answer your question on how to keep it going, you know, you have to really enjoy it. That's number one. I really enjoy getting in front of an audience and playing. And when the music's going great that night and the audience is into it, for me, that's like, you know, the best thing that could happen to me.
You were saying in the beginning, a lot of people don't even have the courage to get started. So I know that your band started 25 years ago. So how did you find the courage to get started so that you could do shows like the one coming up in Roslyn? And how did you figure out, how did you get the courage to get started?
Well, one way for me is, you know, when you're younger, you know, years ago, and you watch the older guys or the older people playing, you know, I'm not saying anything that's new. You watch them and you saw how they got through it. And then when you're fortunate enough, if you are fortunate enough to get with a band that was very successful, you watch how they maintained and the problems that occurred in those particular acts. You try to learn from as much as you can. So when it's your turn, which luckily it became my turn at one point, you know, you've learned from all these resources. It's like going to school, but there's no university for it. You know, the university is being out there and doing it with people who have done it before. So, you know, you go see, because not every show is a winning show, audience-wise or music-wise, and you see how they pick themselves up from it and kept moving. And then when shows are winning and you're doing really well and you're packing houses, you see how they approached it. And the best people I was with always approached it where they were incredibly grateful for a fantastic night, you know. And the people that I was with that taught me when they had a bad night, for whatever kind of bad night you could have, how they would just pick themselves up the next day and ignore what happened and move on to the next night. And that's how it happens, is you learn. If you surround yourself with people who are positive and do positive things, you got a shot that you can learn from that when it's your turn to do things. Because it's nice being a side musician and playing as a side musician, but eventually that could end for you and you could end up on your own.
We were reading on the website, you got into this business, I don't want to age you, but 5 decades ago, give or take.
Yeah, it's too late now for the age, but I say you are who you are. I got in the business, I got into playing live, what does it say, 5 decades ago? That's being pretty generous. When I got in the music business, or I got into playing music, first of all, I got into playing music in school at a really young age. The school I went to was they had some really good music programs, you know, elementary, junior high school, and high school. Tremendous music programs with great music teachers. So I really learned a lot of my technical skills and my theory skills and all that at a young age. And then when we started performing live, there were many more opportunities at that time than there is now in a sense of live performing, because the people were going out more. There weren't as many people, but people were going out more because things weren't as expensive. There were only maybe 8 television stations you could watch, and the TV shut down about 1 o'clock in the morning. And there were big factories around America, and people would have paychecks, and you know, they would spend their money going out and enjoying music in clubs, and the drinking age was 18. So it was a little easier to get out there and perform in front of an audience. That's how I got started.
Well, because what I was going to ask you was, because we talk about the courage to get started, how do you find the courage to keep going? Because as you noted, it is a tough business.
I have my own path, so I'm sort of staying on my path. And to keep doing it is because I love doing it, and that's what we do. You know, that's who we are. It's a calling. At the end of the day, I have to look at it like it was a calling, and it's not for me to question. You know, it's the way life has gotten it, and it's not so easy sometimes. The word is you soldier on. So that's how we do it. And most musicians will tell you that, you know, if they're really doing it seriously, and whether you're doing it part-time or full-time doesn't matter, because when you're performing and you're in front of an audience and people are having a good time, you're forgetting your problems too, you know, just like the audience is forgetting their problems. And a lot of times that's a nice thing, because we all have, you know, all have burdens to bear.
And along the way, you've been nominated for a couple Grammy Awards, the band, you've been inducted into some Hall of Fames.
Yes.
You could talk more about that if you want.
Well, it's a nice thing to have, we played so many festivals in Canada at one point, because we were on the Canadian circuit, that they thought we were from Canada, and they inducted us into the Canadian South Blues Hall of Fame. And it was only until the induction that they realized we were an American band. And it was a really funny moment, and it was a nice moment, and it was quite a great thing to, you know, have them think so highly of us to put us in their Hall of Fame. So that was a good one, you know, I have to say. You know, you take all these awards, I mean, you really enjoy it, and you take all the awards and appreciate it, but, you know, it's an award that's really nice and a great accomplishment, and leave it at that.
Well, what I was going to get into was, I was going to let you speak about the subject for a sec, because that's got to be something you're proud of, but earlier in the program, when Lydia asked you what you were most proud of, it was the Melody of Peace thing, and that, I think, just shows someone like you how much you loved the craft of it, whether you were getting accolades or rave reviews or not. I mean, that's all wonderful and giving the, and but just like that, you being up there and the connection to the audience just seems like it's just a labor of love for you. It's a calling, as you noted before.
Absolutely. No, that's otherwise, you know, that's the way it is. You know, that, you know, you're here to help the neighborhood. So that's what we do, you know, wherever we go. I mean, out in Long Island, we've done many benefits for many different causes and different reasons to do it. So we've, you know, as I said, we've been playing Long Island for many years in different capacities and in different places. So, you know, we're here to help the neighborhood, here to help people out. And that's why we're up there to perform. And it's what we do. That's it. And so that's why I'm hoping. And these days with so many things out there and the ticket prices, you know, I mean, everybody's got to get paid, but the ticket prices are a little high for regular working people sometimes. And so they only can have so much money for entertainment. And so that's why for me at this stage of the game, I can only speak for myself, Professor Louis and the Chromatics, that when people pay money to come and see us, you know, we want to give them the best show because we know there's so many other choices. And if you're coming with people and paying, you know, $30, $40, $50 a ticket, some tickets are extraordinarily high. You know, people are making a sacrifice to come and see you financially. And that's a really great, that's a nice feeling. So we're always appreciative, no matter how large or how small the audience is, because we know there's a sacrifice and many choices out there for the audience to go to on any given Friday night or Saturday night, whenever night. So, I mean, if you probably look at the calendar for June 27th, Friday night in Long Island, the music or entertainment calendar, I bet you there's 50 to 60 choices out there, you know, in terms of just local bars with music or, you know, poetry slams or whatever you might have it, rap shows, blues shows. So for people to come and see is fantastic.
And it appears it's something that you don't take lightly. You take it very seriously, what you do.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to take whatever you do, you should take seriously. Why bother if you don't? I mean, you got to keep a sense of humor, but yeah, you got to take it seriously because it's serious business. Music is serious business. You know, people sacrifice their whole lives for it from going back to, I mean, the kings and queens used to chop people's heads off if they played a wrong note. I mean, you know, it's it could be serious stuff.
And before we go, what is the most meaningful thing for you about the work that you do? Because I know you're saying you have to be there for the neighborhood. You've touched on a lot of things throughout our conversation. What's the most meaningful thing for you?
Well, you know, that's a couple of sided questions. But the most meaningful situation is when you do accomplish something with the music or with one of your songs. It's nice to have one of your songs being accepted by people for a good cause. You know, that's a really meaningful situation, you know. That's number one. The other meaningful situation for me is when people come and see us play. You know, that's meaning, that means something to me, that people have made that sacrifice in their life to come and check you out because they believe in you or they believe in your music or they believe that it's going to be something they want to see for themselves what it is. So that's a meaningful part. And once in a while, if you're lucky enough, somebody will come up to you out of the audience or on the street or whatever and say, you know, your music has changed my life. Good or bad, but it has changed, hopefully good, but it has changed my life and my approach on things. That's a meaningful comment because not too many things you can do that can change somebody's life. And once in a while, that will happen to me.
And what is your reaction to that when people come up to you on the street? If you could share a story about that or an anecdote, what is that like for you?
Well, first of all, it's a fantastic compliment. It means that my story or my song or my performance or something I did is getting across, and that reassures me that I'm doing the right thing. You know, that's what I take back from it mostly, that I am doing the right thing with my life, because I could have been doing numerous things, or maybe I could try to, but this is what I chose to do, and it's showing me that it's working for somebody, even if it's one person, it's working for somebody.
Well, Louis, we thank you for sharing a little bit of your life, because it's working for us on the One World Community Radio Show. And again, Louis, we've mentioned it many, many times, but where can people find you guys on June 27th?
Okay, well, you can't mention it enough these days. Professor Louis and the Chromatics are going to be playing original and band songs, the band songs, at my father's place in Roslyn, Long Island on June 27th. That's Friday night The show starts at 8, but I really suggest, because the way life is, see if you can get advance tickets and get there early, maybe 6. I think you got to eat some. You could eat there. I'm here. The food is good food. Or if not, just come to the show. And be nice if you came and came up to me and said, you heard us on this radio show and on this station, and you heard Lydia and Ricky talking about it. Be nice. That's when I know things are paying off, you know, that people come up and say, hey, you know, I heard that show. It's really nice.
Well, we would. Well, that'd be nice if they heard our show, too. I think Lydia and I would appreciate that very much.
Yeah. But
all in all, thank you, Louis, so much for coming on our show today. You are listening, and thank you, Lydia. You are listening to the One World Community Radio Show on 88.7 FM, WRHU Hempstead, and on 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh, Radio Carnegie Tech, and 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. In honor of what Louis said earlier, you heard Too Much Fun in the beginning, and now you're going to hear Elevate Yourself by Professor Louis and the Chromatics right now on the One World Community Radio Show. Thanks so much for listening.
to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
You're fierce. You take care of business and don't hold back. Taking care of your health shouldn't be any different. You know when something's off. Don't ignore symptoms like fatigue, joint pain, and rashes. Listen to your body. It could be lupus. We're here to help you take control.